just trying to win this dance. We're not
gonna do it. You're staying alive on 101.9 with Marco on Astronaut.
We got the refugees, all stars, rubber dubbing in the club. Why Clef Jean?
Shorty got back. Should I ask her for a dance? Hold on, there's too many in the wolf pack. And besides, dirty cats talking to her, buying her fake furs and taking her to the fever.
Welcome, you're listening to CITR 101.9. It's Thursday, it's 3 o'clock, and it's time for another one half hour of astronomy talk with your host Marco on CITR's Astro Talk.
Ouija's, check the spelling, R-E-F-U-G-E. Get the CD from Sam Goody. You ain't even close with the rhymes that you wrote. Don't be mad cause you broke. Let me clear my throat.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9 FM.
Me, I'm eating mangoes in Trinidad with attorneys. Yeah. My crew slang flow worldwide like a current. Went to every spot where nobody got insurance. Rubber do the math, you ain't half niggas at it. My man's claim true, you forget about it. Ho-ho, just a nuisance, like my influence. Well recognized, you a lie trying to do it. Got you told your lady, oops, we nuts, baby. Smooth and charismatic, automatic, you gon' save me. God bless the dead as my son survive. We strive to teach you, baby, and stay alive and fly.
Welcome. You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR. There's a lot of astronomy news, a lot of cool stuff going on in astronomy, and not just the real life. There's movies with Matt Damon on Stranded on Mars, so there's lots of things to talk about. Last week, they discovered, or they had proof, that there is water on Mars. There were other times where they believed there was water, and they had evidence that there was maybe water there before, but this one actually shows that water is flowing on Mars. They don't know where it's coming from, though. So we need volunteers. We need spelunkers. We need people who are climbers. Anybody wants to volunteer? You can go to Mars, and when you're there, you can discover where the water's coming from. So we need people on Mars to discover where this water's coming from. So what they did is they saw dark streaks on Mars, and they would come and go. In the winter, they'd go. In the summer, they'd come. So from these, they took spectroscopic studies, and they found hints of water. So I think it's really much more exciting to me because, what is much more exciting to me is there's been water found on moons in the solar system. So some of the moons that are around orbit Jupiter, orbit Saturn, they found they have water, more water than all of Earth. So that's exciting. It's under the surface, and we've been told for years now that there's water on Mars, or there's maybe water on Mars. So now that they've actually found it, I guess it's exciting, but for me, I've been hearing that for years. I guess everybody has. So now they finally have proof there's water on Mars. They have to send people there to find where it's coming from. So any volunteers, just sign up and you can go to Mars and find where the water's coming from. Okay, so last week I was talking about Pluto. And interesting planet, they had the New Horizons spacecraft that went by Pluto, I think it was June. So they are sending back data, and this data will take maybe 1 year before it's all in. So it's going to take a while before it gets here, but they've sent some pictures, and I will talk about that in a second. But the most important thing I wanted to talk about was that we have won a Nobel Prize. Yes, a Canadian has won a Nobel Prize. Professor Arthur B. MacDonald from the Sudbury Neutrino Observatory in Canada. I don't think he's a professor anymore. He doesn't give lectures, but I believe he used to be a professor at McGill University. So he has won the Nobel Prize in Physics, along with a professor, Taki Kajita, from the Super Kamiokande Collaboration in Japan. They have their research on neutrino observations. They were awarded for the discovery of neutrino oscillations, which show that neutrinos have mass. I did a show on neutrinos last year, or this year sometime earlier this year. What are neutrinos? Well, neutrinos are little particles that scientists weren't sure whether they had mass or not. But here's an example. If you put your thumb out, if it's 1 square inch, each second 65 billion neutrinos will go through your thumb. So they're produced in cores of stars, so they're produced in the sun. And they go through matter without being absorbed. It's very hard to track or trap them. So even if the sun is on the opposite side of the Earth, let's say it's daytime on the other side of the Earth and we're at night, the neutrinos that are produced in the core of the sun, they will travel right through the Earth. So the Earth really can't stop them. They could stop the odd one out of billions, but that's it. So they're little particles that are almost massless. Not too much is known about them. They have half spin, which is cool, isn't it? Half spin. And they do have mass now. So before, there's something called the Standard Model of Particle Physics, where they classify all the particles, all the elementary particles, and tell their properties. In the standard model, I believe it was determined that neutrinos did not have mass. So what Dr. Arthur B. MacDonald, that used to teach at McGill, he's now at something called the Sudbury Neutrino Observatory in Canada. He, along with another professor in Japan, proved that neutrinos do have mass. So they discussed the discovery of neutrino oscillations. If neutrinos oscillate, then they must have mass. Neutrinos were first discovered or proposed by an Italian physicist, Bruno Pontecorvo, 40 years ago. And they have a profound impact on our understanding of the universe. So if I'm standing here, so my thumb's about an inch squared, each second I talk, 65 billion neutrinos go through my thumb. So since I have a big body, lots of neutrinos go through my body every second. And as I said, if the sun's on the opposite side, if we're in nighttime, the neutrinos still go through the Earth, and they will go through us. So they've tried to, certain scientists around the world, one is in America, I believe, one is in Greenland, maybe one in Japan. They have a neutrino capture machine, I guess that's what it's called. They put some solution deep down in the Earth and try to see if they can capture a neutrino. It's kind of a solution it has to go through, and sometimes they do get they do capture a neutrino. So I'm not sure. I kind of know how they capture it, but if I try to explain it to you, don't have it in front of me, so it would be a big monstrosity, so I won't do that. But anyway, in 1987, there was, all of a sudden on Earth, there was 24 neutrinos that were captured or sighted, and that was a big thing. 3 hours later, we were hit by a supernova. So a supernova in the Large Magellanic Cloud, that is a dwarf galaxy that rotates about us. It's 160 million light years away. No, sorry, 160,000. Sorry about that. And what happened is we witnessed a supernova. So what happened just before the supernova exploded? A bunch of neutrinos were detected on Earth. So neutrinos are a sign that a supernova is going to happen. So that was the first time in history that actual neutrinos from a supernova were detected just before the supernova. Neutrinos come in three types. There's the electron neutrino, the muon neutrino, and the tau neutrino. But neutrinos are chameleons of the particle world, so they can change from one type into another. And they have neutrino antiparticles. So what happened is when neutrinos change, they oscillate. So this is called oscillation. The detection of neutrinos is a challenging task, since they interact only very weakly and therefore interact rarely with matter. So what happened is that they proved that neutrinos oscillate. So this professor did us proud. He was just announced a few days ago that he won the Nobel Prize in Physics. So that's great. So the discovery of neutrino oscillations has a significant consequence for our understanding of nature, from the infinitesimally small to the infinitely large. The oscillation process, which the professor proved, is directly related to the neutrino's mass. So oscillation is only possible if neutrinos have a mass, however small this may be. Since neutrinos are abundant and ubiquitous, however, even the tiniest neutrino mass has major consequences for the universe as a whole. So there's lots of them. In a supernova explosion, it is thought that 99% of the energy in a supernova is carried away by neutrinos. So they're very interesting little particles, and there's lots of little, there's a few observatories on Earth where they have big pools of maybe some kind of solution, maybe salty solution or briny solution, and they try to trap a neutrino. So it is very rare. So congratulations to Arthur B. McDonald. Just last year, it was confirmed, or this year, early this year, that there is another particle that they discovered from a UBC scientist. So that was great. And then there's another, the Higgs boson was also. So there's lots of stuff going on with little particles. So particles, however small they are, if there's lots of them, every second our sun produces lots of neutrinos. So what happens at the core of the sun? Well, there's nuclear reactions and photons are produced and energy is produced and neutrinos are produced. What happens with the light photons? They're originally very energetic. So as they travel, they get absorbed by particles and then they get re-emitted again. So they go on this kind of a zigzag, like a drunken person's walk. So it could take 1,000, 10,000 or 100,000 years for that particle, that little photon of light, to reach the surface. And then once it leaves the surface of the sun, it takes 8 minutes to reach us. But what happens with neutrinos? They instantly leave, and then they reach us 8.5 minutes later. So we can study neutrinos or we can study the sun by studying neutrinos. So neutrinos are very important. There was a new science of neutrino, observing neutrinos only recently. So neutrinos are very interesting particles. They interact very weakly, but since I'm a big guy, I have billions and billions, even trillions of neutrinos going through my body every second. So everybody listen to this. Each second that you listen, there's 65 billion neutrinos going through your thumbnail. And there's even more going through your body. So I'll try to keep you updated on that. So that was very nice that a scientist from Canada discovered something about neutrinos. So what else are we going to talk about? Well, I wanted to talk about Pluto because I want to finish the thing on Pluto. Next week I'm going to start a new topic. But first we're going to pause for a break, and after that I'll come back and talk about our wonderful dwarf planet, Pluto.
Australia and Canada are both countries with a whole lot of space to create some of the wildest sounds on the planet. Join your host Matthew as he explores the musical heritage of his native Australia and features fresh sounds from Canada's independent music world. That's Stranded, the Australian-Canadian music show, live Fridays from 6 to 7:30 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
Quick yes or no questions. Are the following things technically possible? Life on other planets, is that theoretically possible?
Yes.
Okay. What about a Schwarzschild wormhole?
Yes.
Okay. What about this? Me going on a date with Charlize Theron?
No.
What, not at all? In no universe?
No.
In none of the infinite universes does that happen?
No.
It's completely beyond the bounds of scientific possibility is what you're saying?
Yes.
Quick follow-up question. In any of those potential universes, am I the one rejecting her and that's why it doesn't work out?
No. You realize that typing your response is difficult for me, correct?
Okay, sure, yeah. It's just I'm trying to play this out because it just I'm just trying to see if there was any hypothetical hope.
Sure.
It doesn't matter. But never say never. Okay, if time travel were possible, would you want to go back in time and refuse to do this interview?
Yes.
You truly are an incredibly smart man. Stephen Hawking, thank you so much for your time.
Okay, welcome back. This is Astro Talk with Marco on CITR. So there's so much to talk about, this discovery on Mars, but we need spelunkers to go up there. So any spelunkers want to volunteer? We need to dig inside the inside caves. We need to find underground. Where does this water come from? Okay, so I'm just going to finish up on Pluto. A few weeks ago, I started with the origin of the solar system, how it formed, how the inner planets formed. So the inner planets are rocky. They're inside the frost line. The outer planets had icy planetesimals. That's how they started. Icy planetesimals. There we go. And they accumulated more and more ice and ice and ice and got bigger and bigger. And then all of a sudden, when they got bigger, they had enough gravity to pull in gas. So that's how they pulled in their gas. Now there's four gas giants. And, of course, Saturn and Jupiter are the biggest gas giants. And Pluto and Neptune, no, sorry, Uranus and Neptune, they're about 14, 15 times the size of the Earth. But they're not as big as Jupiter or Saturn. Saturn is maybe a couple hundred times the size of the Earth. And Jupiter, and Saturn's about 100 times. So those are real gas giants. So what was Pluto? Pluto was an odd one. It was a lone dog. It was way out there in the cold. It wasn't made like the inner planets. It wasn't like the gas giant. So it was more like a comet. It had ice and metal and rock. So it looked more like a comet. It's a near twin of Triton, which is a moon of Neptune. So there's speculation that early in the solar system, Pluto was actually a moon of Neptune, and then it either collided or something happened to shoot it out. And what happens, I think Triton rotates in an opposite direction of Neptune, so it's possible that banged into Pluto. But we don't know these things. These are speculation. Speculation happens because we weren't there billions of years ago. So now we have this wonderful rock out there called Pluto that was demoted as a planet a few years ago. It's now a dwarf planet, and there was a lot of things like Sedna, Eris, and Quaquar. Quaquar is a cool name, that were like Pluto. So now they demoted into a dwarf planet. So Pluto's now a dwarf planet. But now what's happened, there has been thousands of exoplanets discovered, and these exoplanets are planets that orbit other stars. So there might be a need for a classification or a reclassification because Pluto might become the ninth planet again, and maybe Eris could become the tenth planet. So we'll see what happens. Now I'm going to refer to a image of Pluto that was on September 18th, and the latest images from the New Horizons spacecraft. The caption quotes, "Dramatic Pluto images reveal foggy weather, frosty glaciers." And the subcaption says, "Latest image from New Horizon really makes you feel you are at Pluto." So a new backlit view of Pluto sent home by the New Horizons spacecraft reveals close-ups of an Arctic-like landscape against a dramatic layered sky. So it's like the Arctic. It's very icy there. It's very cold. I think that the view of the sun from Pluto, it looks 1,000 times smaller than it does from Earth. So as you can see, there's not much sun that gets out there. I believe even Jupiter gets about 3% of the sunlight that the Earth does. So you can imagine the kind of amount of sunlight that Pluto gets. It's very little, isn't it? So it's Arctic-like and layered sky, and the image was captured by Pluto, or by the New Horizons spacecraft, and it looked back at Pluto 15 minutes after making its closest approach to the dwarf planet on July 14th. So yes, Pluto is a dwarf planet. So captured this near sunset view of the rugged icy mountains. So Pluto has rugged icy mountains. That's amazing. Flat plains extending to Pluto's horizon. The scene of the picture is 1,250 kilometers wide, or 780 miles wide. Among the new details visible in the images, so let's remember that not too long ago, what scientists knew about Pluto was you could probably fill a page worth of info, and that's all people knew. When the Voyager's spacecraft went out to the outer solar system, I don't believe they went by Pluto. So there wasn't much we knew about Pluto. So what they saw is a dozen haze layers in Pluto's thin nitrogen atmosphere. So it has a nitrogen atmosphere between the ground and an altitude of 100 kilometers. The low-lying hazes in some areas suggest that the weather changes daily on Pluto as it does on Earth. Evidence of a glacial cycle, similar to the one on Earth, that builds up glaciers and then sees them floating into the sea, also occurs on Pluto. So there's natural cycles of different things on Pluto. And remember, there is the moon Charon. It's about 1/8 the size of Pluto. So it's locked gravitationally to Pluto. So you would see the same side of it all the time, and you would see it all, it would never disappear. It's probably 10 times bigger than the moon, so it would be ominous to see it. Since the planet and the moon orbit each other, this is called a geosynchronous orbit. So, for example, on our Earth, we have satellites that orbit in geosynchronous orbit. So they orbit at a certain speed to keep them directly overhead. This is how we get feeds from satellites, cell phones, and TV and all that stuff. So since Charon is in a geosynchronous orbit with Pluto, if we go live on Pluto, we don't need satellites. We can put all our stuff on the moon Charon. And since it's geosynchronous, we wouldn't have to worry. All our TV signals and our cell phones would come. Okay, so could that happen in the future? Well, we'll see. Now there's another image of Pluto. With a setting sun illuminating a fog or a near-surface haze. There's lots of parallel shadows, many local hills and small mountains. So remember, all this is wonderful because we are so far away. As I mentioned, Pluto is small, and it is appears as a little ball, a little point in our telescopes. Not much we can make out of there. So there's a main difference between the natural cycle of the glaciers on Earth and the glaciers on Pluto. So there's glaciers on Earth and there's glaciers on Pluto. But what's the difference? The glaciers on Pluto are made of frozen nitrogen, not water. And scientists aren't sure whether a liquid is involved. Ice appears to be evaporating from one area of an icy plain known as Sputnik Planum. So that's interesting. Sounds like they named it after some Russian thing. Sputnik Planum. What does that mean? Okay, so ice, after it travels tens to hundreds of kilometers through the atmosphere, it's redeposited to the east, so probably is a forest. So let me get this straight. So ice evaporates from one area of an icy plain, and this plain is called Sputnik Planum. Then it travels tens to hundreds of kilometers through the atmosphere, and it redeposits to the east, probably as fast. So one of the scientists that are working on this, Professor Alan Howard from the University of Virginia. He's a planetary sciences who is now on the New Horizons Geology, Geophysics, and Imaging team. He said, in quote, "We did not expect to find hints of a nitrogen-based glacial cycle on Pluto operating in the frigid conditions of the outer solar system." So I don't know much about Pluto, but I'm not sure why he did not expect that. I guess you can expect anything. But their scientists, from their models, they didn't expect these glaciers would be nitrogen-based. So the sun appears 1,000 times smaller from Pluto as it does on Earth. So this might be a bit strange, as on Earth, the glacial cycle on Pluto is thought to be driven by the sun, even though the sun is far dimmer on Pluto, and it's an average of 40 times farther away from the sun than it is on Earth. So in another image, you can go to www.nasa.gov. They have all these beautiful images. You just find Pluto, click on it, and they have so many images. Their view are beautiful. There's one view of a backlit highlights that that shows intricate flows of glaciers on Pluto. So ice that appears to have accumulated on the uplands is draining from Pluto's mountains onto the informally named Sputnik Planum through the 3 to 8 kilometer wide valleys indicated by red arrows on this diagram. So they show that there's this big mountain and then there's a valley. So what happened is the glacier is flowing down this valley, which is kind of amazing, isn't it? Because all the other planets out in the solar system, the gas giant, they are gas surfaces, so you couldn't see this. The flow of the flow front of the ice moving into the Sputnik Planum is indicated by blue arrows. So they have a nice picture here which shows there is ice flowing through valleys just like glaciers flow on Earth. And another image, they have Sputnik Planet is the informal name of the smooth light bulb shaped region of a composite picture that I'm looking at. It's from September 10th. From several of New Horizons images on Pluto. So the planum is brilliantly white upland, and it may be coated by a nitrogen ice that's transported through the atmosphere from the surface below is coated by a nitrogen ice that has been transported through the atmosphere from the surface of the Sputnik planet and deposited on these upland. So these are another. There's another image of Pluto is Popeye's nemesis. Images of Pluto's vast icy plain, informally called Sputnik Planet. Now there's another mosaic high-resolution image that informally named, it's the same one. It's smooth, it's a bright Sputnik Planum. So let me try to find another thing for you. Okay, so now here's another story. The New Horizons spacecraft begins intensive data downlink phase. If you like the first historic images of Pluto, you'll love what's to come. 7 weeks after New Horizons sped by Pluto, previously unknown worlds, the mission team began intensive downloading of tens of gigabytes of data from the spacecraft collected that was stored on digital recorders. They're now moving to high gear. They started in high gear on September 5th, and the entire downlink will take about 1 year. So says New Horizons principal investigator Alan Stern. What we came for are these images and spectra and other data types that are going to help us understand the origin and evolution of the Pluto system for the first time. As the flyby mission went by, New Horizons gathered as much info as they could, as quickly as they could, as they sped by Pluto and its family of moons. I believe Pluto has 5 moons. So this is Marco. You've been listening to Astro Talk. Thank you. I'll talk about another topic next week. So